We are rolling. Who are you and what do you want?
My name is Randall Parker Jr. and I have Michael W. Dean. I think the W stands for Winston Churchill? No. Wareham.
Wareham
or Werecat?
Werecat.
Weremonster?
Yeah, something like that.
Weremonster.
Yep.
Werecat. I like Werecat. Freedom Fiend Master Extraordinaire. He's the last remaining capital F fiend. Well, there's some recruits now, but he's the original founding member.
Oh, I think Nima is. He gets to hang up his jersey with no asterisks. I think he's still a capital F fiend.
Oh, cool.
He's actually doing like more. I think he's doing more. He quit the fiends because he didn't have time to do it because he's a new daddy. And I think he's doing almost more interviews lately than he did an interview with you. He did. He's doing an interview with Berwick. I'm actually chatting with Berwick right now, giving him audio advice. I give everyone audio advice.
You said Berwick. You mean Berwick or Berwick?
Berwick. Yeah.
Okay.
I met him. He didn't pronounce his last name for me. I'm phonetic,
it could,
man.
It could be Berwick. I don't really know, actually.
The guy Jeff. I think he's a sponsor on your show, isn't he?
He's a sponsor of the network, yeah.
Yeah.
The Dollar Vigilante.
Yeah. So what's your network? But Voluntary Virtues or what is this? What are we doing here?
Yeah, so you're on the Voluntary Virtues Network right now. It is a brainchild of Michael.
Yeah.
Is a brainchild of Michael Shanklin.
Ah, man, I love that guy. I love that guy, but I've been trying to get him to improve his audio for years, and it's like finally about 5% better than it used to be. He's still got a long way to go, man.
We need you at the helm, but if it weren't for that, you should really be like just going around like fixing everyone's audio, like a little like audio fairy of liberty. You know what I mean? I don't know about the fairy part, but like, you know, because the pixie dust and flying around, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
So you had me turn my levels down in my headphones for audio quality, and it's so weird because I'm used to hearing myself and my guests like really loud, but I want audio quality to be great.
Well, you can't hear yourself very well?
I hear myself okay.
Okay. I mean, you could go turn it back up a little bit, and this is a teaching hospital, so, you know, I mean, people have complained, like some of my podcasts, like, you got sound check for the first 5 minutes. No, we're teaching the audience how to get better audio. So we're having a problem. We're having a few problems before we started, and we fixed one of them. We'll talk about that, but when I was talking loud, like loud, I was hearing an echo of myself coming through your headphones, which is a pretty common problem, but I don't think I'm going to be getting that loud. So if you want to turn back up, turn it to your comfortable level, go to your comfort zone, brother.
All right, cool. Let me tweak it up a niggity niggity notch.
Yeah.
A nizotch, as it were.
Yeah.
All right. I'm up a notch. So the cool thing is you're going to be recording this in audio. I'm used to doing a video show. And when you send it back to me, I can actually edit and do whatever I want and tweak it out and
you know me, I'm going to do a little pre-editing to begin with. I'll, you know, some long spaces I'll take out and some, you know, where I go, wait, let me start again. Yeah. And I do that in everything I do. Like the Freedom Fiend stuff is live radio. But when I put up the I record it on my end and then I put it up. Within a half hour of the show being over, it's up. And I do so much to fluff and fold it in that amount of time. It's I don't listen to it and take out mistakes. I do it visually. I've gotten so good at it that I can just open up the timeline and go, okay, there. And I take out I probably take out 20 or 25 really short little gaps and a couple ums and ahs. I mean, it probably takes 6 seconds off the length of the whole hour and 20-minute show. But that actually makes it so much more listenable. It's unreal. So, I care about this stuff because I'm making this stuff for the ages. You know, like, we're on radio, we do podcasting, but really I'm making it for the torrent archives because I want this stuff to be around in 100 years. And I think that's the best way to do it. And I take the time, you know, I mean, I make like $200 a month doing the Freedom Fiends on a good month, working 60 hours a week. But I'm not doing this for the money. I'm not, again, I love money. I love making money. I do other things to make money too. But, you know, like, I don't want to put a lot of ads in it. I don't want to have a lot of, like, live reads. Like, and no, I want to recommend I use colloidal uranium enemas to keep away the New World Order. You know, I don't do that stuff. Because I'm making this for the ages. And 100 years from now, people are going to be listening to this stuff. And really, people don't really think that much about audio quality. They kind of think, oh, good enough is good enough. But even people who can't identify and point to and say, well, this is bad audio, this is okay audio, this is good audio, this is great audio, or can't tell you what's good or bad or great about audio, all things else the same, you know, same speaker, same content, same vibe back and forth between co-hosts, whatever. If all that stuff is the same and you have two examples of the audio and one is good and one is great, or one is good and one is bad, people will intuitively listen to the better audio longer and more often without even realizing it.
I 100% agree. Actually, I have a personal account to share in that regard as well, because when I first came into Liberty, so to speak, I was a big podcast, I guess you could say, getting into podcasting myself at the time. And I was doing it more for professional reasons, to learn and build my marketing craft and learning about internet marketing strategies and stuff like that. But when I found the Fiends, you're right, I didn't notice the audio quality specifically, even though I toyed around with recording bands and stuff like in college and whatnot, and like I was aware of good quality and bad quality, but it was more the content that caught me. But then when I started to listen to other Liberty podcasts, especially I'll call them out because I think Adam Kokesh is great, but even to this date, and he's got a budget, which is crazy. He's the one that needs your help, I feel, the most.
Yeah, he's got, you know, several thousand dollars worth of gear. I could literally sound better than he sounds with a $50 microphone.
Yeah, and it's so crucial to – because what it is, I would listen to podcasts for 4 or 5 hours straight, and I would grit my teeth through the good and the bad audio quality. But I knew that if I ever joined the podcasting world, I wanted to kind of hit the ground running and have decent audio quality out of the gate. So,
yeah, well – a big part of his problem is, and this is a big problem with a lot of people who do video casts, he's more concerned about the look than the sound. He's in a metal freaking room. He is in a metal box. That room is a metal box with like metal, you know, it's a big shiny walled box with signs on the wall. And I think he's using a better microphone now. You know, a better microphone isn't a matter of price. Like, literally, there's a $50 USB dynamic mic that's made for podcasting that I've found after testing over 100 mics for podcasting in the past since 2006. That I'm all the Fiends co-hosts use it. I've bought like 10 of these and given them away as for contests. That kid, Nick Hazelton, the anarcho-yakitalist, the 15-year-old kid that's doing a new podcast that I help him set up, his first episode sounded better than, you know, Adam Kokesh's last episode after years. And it's because I said, I gave him the mic. I told him how to use it. I told him what to do with the room he was in, and gave him some tips. I mean, it's not rocket science. It took me like a couple hours, you know, it took me like an hour to teach him audio. And then it took me a couple hours to help him set up his blog properly. That's another thing too, is a lot of people, like, they say they have a podcast, but they don't. They've got a collection of talking videos on YouTube. That's not a podcast. And I'm not
Michael. What? That is me. That is me, sir.
Yeah.
I'm in that boat.
Or they do an audio version of it also, but it's hard to find the RSS feed, or it's hard to find the audio, or they don't have an RSS feed. You have to listen to it on SoundCloud or something. Like, that's not a podcast. And I'm not saying, like, that violates Michael Dean's 12 theses rules of podcasting. I'm saying, like, you're totally missing an opportunity of the beauty of podcasting without that stuff. The beauty of podcasting is MP3s as an enclosure in an RSS feed, period. Boom. Easy to find the RSS feed, top right of your blog. You get a lot more, you know, I mean, like, Adam Kokesh is good looking and charismatic, and he's a muscle guy. So, like, sure, it kind of makes sense for him to do video. But, you know, for most people, watching them do a video talk is about as interesting as watching someone check their email. And the audio is the most important thing. The talking is the most important thing. That's what people should pay all their attention to. The video should be secondary. You know, because the thing about podcasting, it really is kind of magic. It can replace radio. And most people who talk about podcasting is better than radio, you don't have any rules and you can do whatever you want, most people that say that don't have a chance in hell of getting on commercial radio. I'm on commercial radio on 25 stations and I'm still saying that. You know?
Right.
And I'm the guy, like, every punk rocker that says major labels are stupid, they're horrible, and they never, these people had never had a chance of getting on a major label. I did a record on Warner Brothers. My band Bomb was signed to Warner Brothers. My experience with that has left me saying major labels are horrible.
Right.
You know, I'm not against commerce, but media gets chewed up and spit out in most commerce. So,
but I would want to ask you with regards to major labels too, because I was going to ask you about your media, your music experience. Wouldn't you say, I mean, without all, I guess the pill is a poison, kind of a little bittersweet, you would say, but doesn't it in the end also just help you get your music out there to more people too, even if it's kind of the wrong way? It's really getting out there to a lot more folks, right? With like the budget you're going to get through that.
That was true 20 years ago. The internet has kind of changed that. I mean, there's still reasons to do things with major corporations. And like I said, I'm not opposed to it. What I do is kind of, I make the media in my bedroom and try to make it as good of a technical quality as the mainstream corporate product, but with, you know, without the problems that they have with the cool content and without the censorship needed. And then when I'm done with it, or when I'm halfway done with it, sometimes I decide how I'm going to distribute it. You know, like last night I did a song with my wife. We put it up on the Freedom Fiends feed. As soon as it was done. That song's over. That's my extent of it. You know, sometimes when I work really hard, like with Nima Vidadi on a rap song, we'll work on it for a couple weeks. We'll make a good video of it. We'll put it up. We'll really promote the hell out of it. You know, sometimes I write books that are published by major publishers, and the next book I write will be published, self-published. The next book I publish will be published by a small publishing company, and the book after that will be published again by a major publishing company. And when I talk major publishing company, I'm talking about, like, you know, I have three books out that are published by the largest publisher of high school and college textbooks in the country. And, you know, I've done stuff for O'Reilly Media. It's like every computer programmer or nerd you've ever met has a bunch of books by O'Reilly Media on his bookshelf. And I'm not bragging. I'm just saying, like,
you know your stuff.
I know my stuff, and I see the point of, you know, I came up through punk rock. I'm 50 years old. I played in punk rock bands and put out my first record in 84, you know, and we self-published it. I mean, we pressed 1,000 copies of it. We went into a studio, recorded on tape, saved our nickels and dimes. I actually did, like, paid drug testing for a government facility. I was a guinea pig.
Oh my God.
To make money to put out my first record. And, you know, we didn't have money to print the covers. So we had a friend who worked at a, you know, Xerox place, do it in the middle of the night. And then we had a party and bought some cheap beer and had like 10 people over. And we all sat around and like folded over the covers, put them in a plastic sandwich bag, cut the top off with a razor blade. And that's how we made the covers.
That's so punk rock.
And I like walked into record stores and said, hey, will you take 5 of these on consignment? And, you know, they took them. Sometimes sure. They didn't even pay me later, but I didn't care. It was getting it out in the world. You know, I've done everything as a loss leader, but somehow made enough money to not starve for like 20 years now.
Right. I kind of subscribe to that same viewpoint that if you deliver value in the world just consistently, you'll receive value in return because people will want you around or want your presence in their project or whatever the case may be.
I mean,
so you kind of just bring value with your name and with your presence.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing too, is like a project that doesn't make you money or even loses money, if it's done well, it's still worth doing because you're getting stuff out in the world. And if you're on a mission, like I have been every day of my life, you know, it's for liberty now. It was for, you know, sex and drugs before that and rock and roll. But, you know, I've always been on a mission of some kind of like feeling evangelical about what I'm doing.
And speaking of the,
if you do that, even if you don't make money on a particular project, you're increasing the value of your name as a product.
Absolutely. Speaking of the mission itself, Roads to Liberty, we kind of have a consistent theme that we like to do on every episode where we let our guests kind of tell a synopsis of their overview. And I know that's out there a lot for you, but if you want to give like a 60-second rundown of how you went from status to where you're at now.
Okay. I'm glad you asked a question because I thought you were just going to say, give me a 60-second overview of your life outlook. And I'd be like, I can't do that, but I can answer a specific question.
Okay.
Let's see. Hang on. I'm sending
it. It could be 2 minutes. It doesn't have to be 60 seconds.
Yeah.
It could be 4 minutes, whatever you want.
Yeah. I would say, let's see. What's my road to liberty? I've always been kind of, I've always hated authority, I guess would be where I'd start. I, you know, got in trouble in kindergarten for not respecting the teachers. I wasn't rude. I didn't hit kids. I didn't scream or swear at teachers. I just was really into, like, I knew I was smarter than them, than most of them, you know. And the few that were smarter than me, smarter than I really dug, and they became kind of mentors to me. But I, in kindergarten, I could read. I got picked on because the first day of kindergarten, I picked up, you know, a Sally, Dick, and Jane book and started reading it to the teacher, and she had me read to the class because it was rare that a kid could read in kindergarten on the first day.
What is a Sally, Dick, and Jane book? Never heard of that before.
It's you're not old enough. How old are you?
31.
Yeah, it was a series, you know, in the 60s and 70s of simple books with big text and pictures to teach kids to read.
Gotcha.
You know, it was all like, Dick sees Jane. Jane says hi to Sally. You know, it's like kindergarten level reading books for kids.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was anti-disestablishmentarianistic from kindergarten. I got kicked out of boardings. I got driven out of high school because I was being problematic. I got, they recommended that I go to a all boys boarding Episcopal church school called the Church Farm School. I did that when I was 14. Got kicked out of there at 17 between 11th grade and 12th grade for something that they found out I did, which was wrote a letter to Mick Jagger telling him to buy the school and fire the headmaster. And wow. I went to college at 17, lived on my own, went for 2 years, flunked out of everything the second year except for my radio, for my broadcasting class. I took a radio class. someone's calling me. What do you want? Skype call. Who's Skype calling me? Let me take this. Hang on a sec.
Sure.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hey, Michael.
Hey, Ben. Hey, Ben Stone. I'm doing an interview right now with RJ Parker. Can I call you back later?
He can stay if he wants.
Well, probably not because I don't have phone reception. But anyway, I'll talk to you some other time.
Cool, man. Take care, brother. Love you. Bye-bye.
That's cool, man. That was a nice little cameo.
It was not planned. Yeah, there's like four people outside my family that have my phone number or aren't people I, like, you know, do business with, like publishers and editors and stuff. And Ben's one of them. We talk almost every day.
Can I just say that Ben Stone next to the Freedom Fiends and pretty much you guys, Pre-Talk Live and Ben Stone are my top three. And
we are the top three. Us three are the top three.
Good. I'm glad it's official. But he's like my Liberty grandpa. Like, even though he's not old enough to really be my grandpa, but like he's kind of there.
He's my Liberty. He's my Liberty sponsor. Like an AA. Yeah. When you're new, you have a sponsor. I mean, I've been at ANCAP for a while, but my joke is that, you know, I can call him up at 3 a.m. and wake him up and say, "Ben, I'm thinking of voting. Talk me out of it.
I'm having statist thoughts. Help me.
Having minarchist thoughts. Help me." Yeah.
So. But when he was, you know, dealing with his medical issues, I was really worried, not worried, but like, you know, nervous. And it was hard for, it still is hard for me because he's not out there as much. You know, he does do a podcast here and there, but having him on like almost a daily basis, what was it, like a year ago, really helped me understand liberty. Like he debunked, you know, Abraham Lincoln and all the wars and stuff. He debunked a lot of stuff that all these statist structures that were in my mind that I believed in, like, wow, yeah, this war was actually worth it, or, you know, something like that. You know, he really helped crumble that.
Yep.
You guys taught me to laugh at the state. That's what Freedom Fiends really, and you guys were the first ones too.
He helped me a lot too. I mean, I was, you know, I was one of these rifle strokers until I started listening to him. You know, I was one of these, you know, read a lot of Boston Tea Party, read Mike Vandebau, read Unintended Consequences, you know. Not that I thought I wanted to go shoot people, but I thought it was like inevitable that everybody into Liberty would turn into a Ruby Ridge within 3 years, you know, and I was trying to prepare for it. And God, I haven't even gone out shooting this year, literally. So I need to soon. But
I haven't shot enough either. I'm new at it. I just started shooting a few years ago. I've gone like 3 or 4 times in my life. But I'll tell you this. I used to feel the same way. I used to kind of casually say before I was actually you know, a liberty-minded person officially or philosophically in my mind, I used to kind of say to my friends, like, kind of, you know, if this keeps getting worse, you know, I could see there being a revolution. And you know what? I would join that revolution. I would get out there and I would, you know, because I just figured that would be what would happen. And it'd be like a, you know, like your white blood cells in your body attack a, an infection and take it over. Like, that was kind of my mental picture I had for, you know, shrugging off the state. But then you just have a new state. So
yeah, and it's pointless. And it's like, most people that talk about it's time for a revolution have never been in combat. Most people who've been in the military are not quick to jump to that. You know, they're like, because they've seen it, and it's civil wars are horrible, man. People get, you know, tied up, and their wives get raped in front of them, and people's hearts get cut out and filmed, and you know, the electricity gets shut off, and
it's like a field day for savages. Like,
it really is.
Savages among us are like, oh, goody, a war.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, yeah, you could probably fend off a couple people trying to housejack you with your AK-47, but like, you know, if you're a couple and you live alone, like, do you really want to sleep in shifts and have to be guarding the house 24/7? No, man.
God, no. And I like how Molyneux's been recently pointing out that, like, or at least debunking, and not just Molyneux, but a lot of liberty-minded folks in the movement are pointing out that without the state, we wouldn't really have wars because there's nothing to take over. So maybe there'd be a skirmish, you know, among, you know, a couple landowners in a given region, but it would never escalate too far out of that because there's no centralized asset to take over, which is like the helm of the state.
Yeah. So,
but anyway, so I want to talk to you about.
Well, I didn't answer your question about my road to liberty.
Oh yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
See, that's why I'm the pro, because I love digressing, but I also love remembering to bring it back. And I do want to talk about the audio thing here before we came on. We connected via Skype. You don't usually do that, and I'm actually working on something called Fiend Phone. I have an Indiegogo campaign. People can go to Fiend Phone FeenPhone.com and read about what we're trying to do to improve doing a podcast or radio show remotely to make it better than Skype. But you connected and you sounded horrible. I mean, I was like, man, what mic are you using? It sounded like you were in a room full of machinery with a cheap headset that was on the floor and you were yelling to it in a bathroom. That's what it sounded like. And you were like, no, I'm using this really good mic. And you told me what it was. And I looked it up and I'm like, yeah, that's the same one Stephanie Murphy uses. She sounds stellar. Why don't you? And
right.
And I immediately realized what the problem is because I have a lot of experience doing this. And I, you know, that's part of diagnostics is you've dealt with the problem before. I was pretty sure that your sound card wasn't touching the right audio device and you were being picked up on your cheap onboard laptop mic rather than your good external mic. And the test for that is really simple. You tap the mic and you tap the laptop and the person on the other end tells you what's louder. And that's what it was. And you just change the settings in Skype and then you sound really good.
Yeah, it was your first guess too. Well, honestly guess, but your first intuition.
Yeah, so my road to liberty, you know, throughout my adult life, I moved out of my home really young, like 18 or 17, moved out of my state at 19, like a couple days after college, moved to Washington, D.C., wanted to be playing a band, wanted to play in a punk rock band. Because, see, I played most of the things that I've been attracted to, like punk rock and podcasting and the internet and been early adopters of, I haven't really been jumping on a bandwagon. It's more like I've wanted to do this, and then there's a way to do it. Like punk rock, like I tried to play in these cover bands when I was a teenager, and like, you know, they'd be like, hey man, you have a lot of spirit, but you know, you're not really good enough to be in this band. And I got, instead of like learning to play like Eddie Van Halen, I got really good at playing the simple stuff and being really melodic in it, and like was kind of playing punk rock before I ever heard of it. And then I was like, wait, there's an audience for this? And I knew it was happening in D.C., so I moved with my friend in D.C., went with my millionaire friend who was summering near me, went and lived in his dad's mansion for about 3 weeks till his dad came home for the summer and kicked me out. And then I lived in an abandoned factory in Georgetown in Washington, D.C., but had a job. I got a job working in a sandwich shop. It would like wake up every morning and like tie my tie on in the rearview mirror of a car on the street and then go work. And I played in a punk rock band, played in a few bands, put out some records, you know, moved to San Francisco, played in Bomb, which was a kind of popular band. It was a really good band and put out a bunch of records, one of them on Warner Brothers. and then got a heroin addiction, and then that broke the band up, and then I got clean, and at 30 I went to college and learned a little bit about computers and like how to do a resume and how to work in an office, signed up for temp agencies, put a suit back on, and went and worked in offices for a while. And like while I was doing that, then sometimes while I was at work, like I got good enough to do 8 hours of temp work in 4 hours. Then I would sit there and work on my novel or something. And, you know, got when the internet happened, I was like, you know, in 96, I had a website. I had that kittyfeet.com domain since 96. It was a different site then. Now it's the Anarchy Gumbo. But I was instantly like, I've been looking for this my whole life. I've been looking for a way to reach the world instantly from where I'm at, you know, because I was always trying to make radio transmitters as a kid and having pen pals from the back of magazines and trying to like reach outside myself to the world. This sounds kind of specious and like, oh, I'm important, but I believe this. I feel like I was born the wrong century and on the wrong planet. Like either, you know, 100 years too late or 100 years too soon, like the Johnny Cash song says, or on the wrong planet or something, because I've adapted really well to narrow confines of doing things my way on this planet and making a living and surviving and thriving and reaching the world. But the path has gotten really narrow with it to the point where, like, you know, when I went to Porkfest, I hadn't been out of my town in like 4 years, you know, and I rarely leave my property. I'm a recluse, but you know, I got out and I was like, I wasn't shy. I was fine. I was happy. I was like, oh yeah, I remember humans, these things. And, you know, interacted and made, you know, had a lot of, got to meet my internet friends in person and had a great time with them and looking forward to going back. But, so during all of that, I was very against authority, but it was weird because I had the status training, to where like I voted Democrat and I was really lazy about it. Like I didn't study the issues. I basically thought my vote counts. It's important. And then I'd take out the recommended voting sheet and clip it out of the local like commie free paper, you know, the weekly SF Weekly or whatever, and take that in and vote the way it told me to. That's how I ended up voting for Nancy Pelosi once in my life. And I voted for Bill Clinton. And then let's see what happened. I was into a bunch of things that were kind of marginalized scenes where people look at you weird, whether you do them, you know, no matter what you do with them. Like I was a bike messenger, I was a punk rocker, and then I was into like kink. That's how I met my wife. We met on a kink dating website. And all of those things are kind of marginalized, and you kind of have to like put up a front to the world of like, wait, why are you marginalizing me? And it made me really understand, you know, kind of like people's prejudices without really looking at it in a political sense. So by the time I discovered the concepts of liberty, which were around the year 2006, I was ready for it. I mean, I've heard this said, and I almost believe this, that libertarians are born, not made. And you can't convince someone who is a statist at heart to become a libertarian, and you can tell the difference when you talk to somebody. If you talk to someone who's a libertarian at heart and they've been indoctrinated like I was, you know, when you give them the ideas of liberty and you're logical and kind with them, you don't attack them for being a damn statist, they won't instantly get it. But the questions they ask when they say, well, what about the roads? It won't sound like an attack to you or like they're defending their family. It just sounds like they want to know more. And they may not get it overnight. There are people who will defend the state like they're defending their mother. I almost feel like those people are a different subspecies, although that kind of gets into like a eugenics view of the world. And
But I know where you're coming from with that. And I don't think it's that crazy. I really feel like there's, I don't say two species, because that's a really kind of aggressive statement to make.
Two varieties.
It's just that two flavors. I feel like some folks like are not even looking for new knowledge. They're very interested in staying in the cave. They like the fire, the warmth.
Yeah, yeah.
And then some folks are like, oh my God, I'm in a cave. Let me get the hell out of here. Yeah. I want to go see what's outside. Like there's just two types, you know?
Let's pause this for a sec and save the file. I like to do that every 30 minutes or so I don't crash.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges.
This
is Davi Barker from shinybadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at shinybadges.com, write worms in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
Recording. Okay, so in 2006, I was recently married and digging my wife. I still love her totally, man. She's like my best friend. We've been together 8 or 9 years. I don't even remember. I don't even count. It's like every day is our anniversary, you know?
Yeah, that's really cool.
And we were living in California, and I was sick, and she went to the store to get me some NyQuil, and someone tried to break in the house while I was home there alone. And, it, you know, they wasn't like smash home invasion. It was basically somebody was trying to pry the window open with a stick. And I actually, the only weapon I had was a stun gun. I went outside with a stun gun and a telephone and confronted the guy. And he wasn't, you know, I don't think he was a violent guy. He was basically, he was like a middle-aged Mexican, probably Mexican national who was like a day laborer. I found out later who he like smelled like alcohol. I could smell him from like 20 feet away. What I found out later was there was like, we lived one of those kind of like, we owned the house, but it was one of those, controlled by a homeowners association, and all the houses look the same and yet they're all painted the same.
Right.
And there was a landlord that owned a house just like it, like five houses away, that had rented it out to like 25 day laborers. And I think this guy thought it was his house, you know, I thought,
oh, okay.
And didn't have a key. But
right.
It scared the hell out of me, man. And the next day I said to my wife, we're getting a gun. And she said, I don't know, man, guns are admitting the world's a bad place. And I said, sometimes the world's a bad place and I love you and I want to protect us.
Right.
So we went to a gun store, bought a shotgun, which just seemed like the natural thing for home defense to me. And it's like one of the easier things to own in California. Mm-hmm. There was still a 7 or 10 day waiting list. And during that time, during the waiting list, we like took some gun safety and, you know, skill classes at that gun store. They had a gun range also. And immediately like dug the idea of gun safety and said, you know, no matter how good of a shooter I ever become, I'm going to be absolutely safe and teach people to be safe. And mm-hmm. I'm still kind of on that mission. You know, I made that DVD, Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, which people can download free on the Fiends Torrent site if you go to freedomfiends.com. You know, I sell all my stuff and give it away, too. That's kind of my business model. And it doesn't make me rich, but I kind of feel like it's more important to me that somebody see this stuff I'm making, because I feel it's important for the world, than if I actually get paid for that one person, you know? So I bought a few books on shotguns. Oh, and my wife loved shooting. And, you know, whereas a few weeks earlier, she'd been like, I don't want a gun in the house. As soon as she fired the shotgun, she said, I love this. I want to get more of these.
It's a real exciting and, you know, thing.
I mean,
it's pretty
she now carries a Glock in her purse, a loaded cocked Glock in her purse 100% of the time.
Safety on?
There's no safety on a Glock.
No?
No.
See, that shows how much I know.
But it's safe. She has a gun, a really nice, well-designed carry purse. It's not just like dropped in the top with, you know, tampons and lipstick. I mean, it's like in the side of it in a zip case or a Velcro case. It's there's no way it's going to accidentally fire it. Put it that way. And she is very careful. She knows gun safety. I mean, we're gun safety safe to the point where, like, if we pick up a hairdryer or a power drill, we have our finger on the side of it, like we're holding a gun.
So just to interject real quick, do you think I could kind of safely say that part of what kind of woke you up to liberty was the idea that you kind of started to realize the state wasn't really going to protect you?
Yes. That was subconscious. I didn't really think of that even once we got a gun. But I was ordering shotgun books on Amazon, and I got this thing that said, people who bought this book also bought, and one of the books was You and the Police by Boston Tea Party. And I was like, what's that? And I went and looked at it, and I ordered it. And it's a pretty short book. I mean, you can read it in a sitting. I did. And by that time, we had a handgun, and we were frustrated that we couldn't take it out of the house because it was California. And we looked into getting permits, and we were like 10 feet, you know, we were like 4 blocks from the edge of LA County, on the end of LA County, like 4 blocks from Ventura County. You can technically get a concealed carry permit in Ventura County, and you cannot in LA County unless you're a movie star or a diamond merchant or a judge. And literally, like, that, I think, was the realization. It wasn't so much the state won't protect me. It was, wait, if we lived 4 blocks away, we could carry this out of the house and protect ourselves. That's ridiculous. That's what really hit it for me. And then I read You and the Police by Boston Tea Party in one sitting. I started at like 10 o'clock at night and finished it at like 4 in the morning. And it blew my mind because I'd read books before, like written, you know, when I was a teenager. Like I found a book about, it was like for drug dealers on protecting themselves from the police, but it was like, you know, it had a lot of criminal talk in it, and not just nonviolent things. Like, you know, it talked about like shooting snitches and stuff. And I was like, that's scary. And I read Boston's book, and Boston is square in a good way. I mean, he is like, he's
like Rothbard.
Yeah. Kind of. Like a cowboy Rothbard. I mean, he does not do drugs. It's a book on how to protect yourself against becoming a victim of the cops over nanny crimes. And he mentioned something in it about open carry. And I was like, what is open carry? I've never heard of this. And I did some digging and I realized that in some states, and especially Wyoming, you can open carry a gun without a permit. And then I got on, I went from statist to minarchist in one sitting from this book and from what was going on in my head before that. And then I got on the Free State Wyoming forum, like as the sun was coming up, and posted, hey, I'm interested in your ideas. And like Mama Liberty immediately replied to me and I started chatting with her. Do you know who she is?
Is she the founder?
No, she's the grandmother in Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom.
Oh, okay.
She's the 60-something gray-haired granny that open carries into a bank in the movie Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom.
Right.
And she was really friendly to me and answered my stupid questions about the roads and things like that. And I woke my wife up at like 7 a.m., you know, half hour before she had to get up and get ready for work, and said, honey, we're moving to Wyoming.
That's awesome.
And she was like, what? Okay. And like nine months later, we lived here and it sold that house. And, you know, it was, I mean, there are unfree people in Wyoming and there are free people in California, but it's like, it's a lot easier to be a free person in Wyoming overall for the most part. I mean, you can carry a gun, you can protect yourself. If you have to shoot somebody in self-defense, you're less likely to go to prison or get sued if it's a clean shoot. And I mean, that's not what I base freedom on. That's part of it. But, you know, there's lower taxes, people are less up in your business, and there's less people. And for me, that's kind of freedom. There's less people.
Hey, I just did the same thing, actually. Me and my girlfriend just picked up and moved our entire life from one of the statist places in the world, South Florida, Broward County, where she was born and raised, and where I moved to back in January just to try out Florida. And oh my God, I thought the cops in New Jersey were bad. There are cops in Florida.
Where are
everywhere
you now?
Where you turn. We are in a little shack in the woods in a nice little town called Ojo Caliente,
New Mexico. State?
New Mexico, in the northern part, yes, in the hills.
You know, I used to own like a half an acre of land that I never saw in New Mexico. It was in Kenna, New Mexico. It was like 80 miles from Roswell.
Okay, a little bit more in the center.
Yeah, like my grandfather won it in a poker game and willed it to my dad, and he gave it to me.
I actually sold
it and bought an AK-47, but.
Good trade. I'm actually talking to someone about owner financing a 5-acre plot in south of Colorado for $5,000. I don't mind saying it because it's so cheap. And, you know, he's going to finance it for me for a year. I got to give him a deposit. But with 5 acres, I'm going to make kind of a liberty commune compound or whatever you want to call it. You know, forgive the terms, but essentially just an enclave where people can post up and do some free market homesteading, and you don't have to pay me anything. The property tax, I think, on the land, if I get it, is, I think it's like $65 a year.
Cool.
Something like that.
Cool.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, the property tax on my land was like $8 a year. And I paid it for like 5 years and then finally just sold the land. It was weird, too, selling the land. I sold it for $650. And like trying to sell it online, like people thought it was a scam. And I'm like, dude, I'm Michael Dean. You know me. I'm not going to scam. You know, like people I didn't know. I mean, I tried to sell it on like some prepper sites and they all said like, beware of scam. You know, like, dude, you can look this up in the deeds. My name is on it. You can call the county, you know?
Yeah. So I wanted to go back to your last thing you were talking about and just ask you a little bit more. What's interesting when you move from California to Wyoming is there's this idea that when America was formed that we're going to have these states that can be distinct and have their own individual rules so that preference can be acted out within a society. So if people like a lot of guns, you can go to the gun state. Or if you like a lot of drugs, you can go to the drug state or whatever the case may be.
If you like both, you can go to Colorado or Washington.
But it kind of worked out that way, but it kind of backfired because the federal government just imposes itself everywhere it can. So do you think that having those boundaries where there's different rules was a good idea, or do you think it will never work that way?
As statist ideas go, it's pretty bold and cool. I mean, most places in the world, the de facto laws are identical across a nation. There are differences, though, and it's usually customs and local just kind of attitudes. Like Canada, for instance, I mean, the gun laws are largely the same across the country, but when they demanded registration of long rifles, you know, Saskatchewan, which is kind of like the Wyoming of Canada, had really low compliance with that. And it's just because they're used to them. They need them for survival. They live in the middle of nowhere. The police take an hour and a half to get to you some places. And just, you know, it was hard to enforce. So there are things like that. And I do believe that America, the federal government is trying really hard to uniformize all the laws from state to state through federal laws and through state laws and pushing agendas and suggestions and things like that. And, you know, they're not going with the most lenient laws. They're not trying to average them. They're trying to make everyone as tyrannical as the worst states. But I don't know. I honestly don't worry as much about tyranny on a day-to-day level as most libertarians, at least most libertarian media producers, of what they talk about. Maybe I have my head in the sand. I don't think I do. I mean, I was just looking through my Twitter feed and saw something about a kid, you know, shot by the cops.
Right.
I'm aware of that stuff. And occasionally I do bring it up on the radio, on the weekend shows, because that's when we're on the most stations. And I kind of feel like it's my duty as someone who has homesteaded 25 slots on, you know, slots on 25 commercial stations. I kind of feel like it's my duty to the world to occasionally get off of just the, hey, we're having fun. This is the Freedom Fiends. We're making fun of stuff. This is what we do. You know, what's your cat doing today? What's your audio tips today? And actually go like, by the way, you know, police aren't your friends and they are the enforcers and they will kill you. And here's an example of what they did this week. I do that every couple weeks because talk radio is a lot different than the internet. You know, the internet, people find what they want to find. Talk radio, I always tell our co-hosts when they first start, or if I interview somebody, which is rare, I say, okay, this is different than the internet. Here's what you should picture. The average listener is a guy who's only going to hear this show for 20 minutes. He's a 73-year-old grandfather driving from church to the VFW picnic with his grandkids in the back seat. So you kind of have to compartmentalize it. You have to like deliver everything about the concepts of liberty in 20 minutes. I'm never critical of Christianity. I'm not a Christian. I'm basically a deist like Thomas Jefferson. You know, I think there's a God, but I think he doesn't care.
Is that because Christianity is just so popular that you don't want to just be unpopular in that way? Like you don't want to ruffle feathers?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's put it this way. You know, I'm a deist, which is really like not a big part of my identity. You know, I don't say I'm not a founder of the deist organization or anything. It's basically like an agnostic who believes there's something, you know, it's I'm not like an atheist. Like they're religious about it usually, you know, I'm not a theist. They're religious about it, but it's like, I have far more. I saw this tweet that summed it up the other day. It was some atheist saying, I now have more in common with Christian libertarians than I do with atheist statists. And that really nailed it for me. And it's like, somebody's religion doesn't, I guess I'm saying I'm a thin libertarian. I'm trying to give a thin libertarian message in a way that won't turn people off based on whatever flavor of other beliefs they have. You know, like, mm-hmm. I'm personally pro-abortion. I never, almost never talk about abortion on the show because so many people listening to talk radio are so adamantly anti-abortion. I never talk about Christianity. You know, one of my co-hosts is a Muslim. I hate to say this. I'm kind of like, don't talk about that. Yeah, I'm kind of like, let's not talk about that much.
Right.
I've allowed him to talk about it a couple times in passing. It's kind of self-censorship for the purpose of like, you know, I'd rather hear you being a great liberty guy and then have people go on your site and say, I want to learn more about that guy and find out that he is a Muslim, than get kicked off of radio stations, which is possible if a bunch of people from that town call in and say, well, you had a Muslim on your show, you know?
Yeah.
So I try to keep it light and very, you know, I'm not being a puss-puss. I'm not afraid of losing a station. We're not, like, making much money at all. But it's more like I work so hard on getting each station and I feel like each one is a black flag, is an anarchist flag, is an ANCAP flag planted on some statist territory that gives me a soapbox, you know, and it's like that's precious to me for spreading liberty and I don't want to mess it up by side issues, you know.
100%. Yeah, I agree with you 100%.
And eventually we will get kicked off the radio. I really believe that Mrs. Clinton is going to be the next U.S. president, and I really believe that she is going to kick all of the people who are critical of the government off the radio, you know, from us to Free Talk Live to Rush Limbaugh.
And I just want to say, too, now that I have you on the show, too, because I want to hear your point on this, your take on this. More than ever, I feel like the elections are completely irrelevant. Would you agree with that?
What elections?
Yeah, right. Like,
what elections? Seriously.
Watching the last, whatever it was, you want to call it, election, I don't know, the parade that they do, the charade, I really felt like it was Jack Johnson and John Jackson. It was like two of the same.
Clones,
like,
yeah.
We need more war. We need more than more war.
Oh, well, yeah.
There's not enough war.
Nima did a great job parodying that in that video, Obama's Feet Stink, where he did white face as Romney, and we did the debate section of that rap video. Yeah, he nails
it. Right. Yeah, I love your guys' music that you've done together. I hope you do some more. It's informative and entertaining at the same time.
Yeah, Nima and I are still really good friends.
I'm glad to hear that.
And will be for life. But he's just too busy being a daddy and working two jobs and working 60 hours a week and, you know, trying to be a dad to his little girl and a husband to his wife to commit to, you know, any kind of schedule. I mean, really, it's weird that I'm doing scheduled media, which is kind of why, like, today's my day off. And I was kind of like, you know, you said, could we do an interview in the near future at some time? And I'm like, right now, let's do it right now.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, right. I have the day off. It's not that it was now or never, but I was like, you know, I found that at a really good time. It was like, I'd been up a couple hours. I was caffeinated. I'd answered all my email. Mm-hmm. I'd done all my stuff to wake up. I'd had breakfast. And I was like, what am I going to do the rest of the day? I guess I could clean the house. I don't know. Oh, wait. And I get to talk? Okay. Let's do it.
You would have just talked to Ben Stone for the same amount of time.
I probably would have. Yeah.
Because he called you like 10 minutes in. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, literally, like, Ben and I podcast every day on the phone without sharing it with the world. And sometimes we even go, this is great. Why aren't we recording it? And we record it. But, you know. I like to be able to walk around the house.
Well, what struck me with you and Nima's dynamic was that you're such a natural conversationalist that you can actually keep a conversation going with yourself as long as you have a little, like you say, you need a little prompting or a little volley back from the other side. But Nima would come in with something really intellectual or clinical, or you'd have him read something, which is almost like he'd be like, okay, and then like he'd be like doing your little task, and then he'd try to go his own direction and you'd go your own direction. It was like this cat and mouse of like, and there was the ongoing themes of the Fiends that I don't know if you guys intentionally planned it out or if it just kind of happened, but like, you know, what did Obama do to you? Or, you know, gosh, there's so many.
Tyranny today, freedom fix. Yeah. I mean, we worked really hard on it, and Nima is brilliant. And he and I had an amazing, back and forth to the point where, I mean, a lot of people like the new show with 12 co-hosts, and the 12 co-hosts are really great. And part of it is I'm being the Liberty College of teaching people how to do live radio to replace me, you know, to keep this going. Because really, there's only, you know, there are a couple hundred syndicated radio shows in the country, and only two of them are talking about real liberty. It's us and Free Talk Live. But there needs to be more. And, you know, when they kick everybody off radio, it's going to all go to the internet. And as much as I dislike the, like, interruptions of, you know, the ads on talk radio and the confines of being at the same place at the same time, I think if we got kicked off radio, I think I would still do at least a couple days a week, you know, like an LRN type thing of like to a show clock and automated and with ads and stuff. Cause I kind of like the format and I want to teach other people to do it. I've actually had a couple people say they've stopped listening to The Fiends because without Nima, it's not what it was. And, you know, I always dislike it when like a band I like, you know, someone who's really important, like the guitarist or the singer, leaves and they replace them and keep the band name. I think that's cheesy. Like, I always like the Discord.
Actually,
the Discord record thing is starting a new band. You know, they always start a new band, even if the drummer left. They'd start a new band and write a whole new set of songs and put out a record. But, you know, there's a certain purity to that. But usually the reason people keep together with the same band in that situation is economic reasons or because the whole band has become their whole identity. I don't make a living at Liberty Media, and I recommend that nobody try to, because then you end up compromising it, you know, not necessarily putting ads on, but like Stefan Molyneux, like every once in a while, he just sounds like a televangelist yelling at people for not giving him enough money. And it's ridiculous. It's, and just because you make some money at, this is what like doing all this media my whole life and making some money at it has taught me, is like, just because you're making money at something right now, there's no guarantee you'll be making money at that in a year. So diversify. Sure. And so a few people have been like, oh man, it's not The Fiends anymore without Nima. And it's like, if we were not on radio, I probably would have changed the name of the show and the format of the show. I would have done the same thing with the 12 Coast, but I wouldn't have kept the name. Nima gave me the blessing to keep the name. And the reason I kept the name and kept it going is because I have staked out those flags, those ANCAP flags, on the statist world of radio. And that's really hard to do, and it would be really hard to start over with a new name and do it again. And I think it's important to keep that keep that land held, you know. And you know, if we get kicked off radio in 3 years by the president, I'll probably keep the name by then, because by then I will have homesteaded it with the new people enough that that will be the Freedom Fiends. And, but actually there's some stars starting to emerge, man. Everybody's good, but I think Davi Barker is kind of turning into the new Nima Vedati. He and I are great together. And you know what? He's the most improved player. And I built that because Nima and I interviewed him on The Fiends 2 years ago. He was horrible. I interviewed him around the same time.
He has really changed.
I interviewed him on the Anarchy Gumbo.
His personality.
And afterwards, you know, Nima was like, oh, how'd it go on the Gumbo? And I'm like, you can listen to it if you want, man. It's pretty boring. That guy's not very good on radio. But he's great now. He's stellar. And he and I have developed such a good back and forth where it's like, we can talk about nothing and it's great, like with Nima and I. And when we talk about something, it's even better. So, Davi,
your last show with Davi was really good.
Yeah, man,
I loved it. And and I like Lucinda Fien a lot too.
He's good too. He's kind of quiet and understated, but he's funny as hell and he's smart, so it's good. They're all good. Diana is really funny. Diana,
she's cool.
I built her too. I was like, she'd never been on a microphone before, and I was chatting with her on email. She was a Fien fan. And I was like, hey, I'm going to be adding some co-hosts. Do you want to, you know, I said, get this mic, get this $50 mic, the USB 2005, which I recommend to everybody. And I said, get that mic and just call in some night on Skype and we'll check you out. And I did. And it was great. And, you know, she's funny. She laughs all the time. It's good. It's good radio. But
she's got a really cool voice, a nice voice for radio.
Yeah. And I don't want to, like, you know, not go through all of them one by one and name them all. They're all good, but it's like, I just really noticed the thing with Davi and I getting almost magical. No homo.
I was going to say that kind of what you went through, the transition, is almost like if you really love a band and then they break up, but like different members go into new projects or someone starts a solo project. It's almost like hating on the band if you don't check out the new projects. You know what I mean? Like, I would be excited. Like, do you know who Ted Leo is?
No.
Okay, there was a band called Chisel in the mid to late 90s, kind of like indie, shoegazy kind of punk rock. And it's really good if you want to go back and check it out. Really male, high-pitched kind of vocals and punk rock sounding cool, melodic emo. And then that broke up, and I guess it was kind of a bad breakup, but I found him years later, I was at a Ted Leo on the Pharmacist show. I didn't realize it was the same frontman. And the music starts and the vocals are unmistakable. So I was like, oh my God, this guy sounds just like Ted Leo. I didn't even know what Ted Leo looked like till I got back to my dorm and searched him online. And I was like, oh my God, it's the same guy. So I became a fan of the new band. And I was actually on Twitter talking to him in like 2009, 2010. And we were going back and forth. And I thought it was going great until I said, man, I really love Chisel. You know, I really wish you, you guys didn't break up. You know, I love that material. And he's like, dude, that's a soft spot or sore spot for me, man. He's like, that's a bad time. I don't look back on that favorably. And like, I really wish you hadn't said that. And I was like, oh man, I really offended him. And I was like, I didn't mean it like that. You know, I love Ted Leo and the Pharmacist. And he's like, yeah, man, I just, you know, I had a bad ending with that situation. And like, I just,
he probably hears that 10 times a day too, you know?
Yeah. And his new material is great too. So I didn't want him to feel that way. But yeah, it's cool though. I know you focus on how you can reach anybody on the internet too. So
yeah, I actually learned really early on that it's better not to meet my idols. I mean, I don't really have idols, but people I look up to, you meet them and they disappoint you no matter what, because they're human. It's better to just enjoy their music. Like, I remember the band Flipper. I was a big first adopter of Flipper in the early 80s, and I went backstage to meet them with my girlfriend at the 930 Club in DC, and they were like, why don't you get the F out of here, man? But your girlfriend can, right. But your girlfriend can stay.
There's a band I really dig called Have Mercy right now. Mm-hmm. They're on a label called Top Shelf Records, which has a lot of bands that I really love right now.
Yeah.
And they just had all their stuff stolen out of their tour van in New York, in Albany, New York, right? And so I on the comment thread on Facebook, I go, we should do like an Indiegogo or a Kickstarter or something to help them raise the money. And I was like, I would love to help out with that. You know, someone PM me and I'll get it started, you know. And no one says anything to me at all, which I'm not complaining. I still love this band. Like you said, going into their world almost is lackluster. It's kind of disappointing. But so no one says anything to me. And then a few minutes later, like a half hour later, there's a GoFundMe campaign posted off their page, like, help, Have Mercy, raise money for their new gear. And like, no one asked me if I wanted to help or if I would share the link or anything. I'm like, okay, that was totally my idea, but you guys run with it. That's cool. Like, no problem, you know?
Yeah, fundraising's a weird egg. I was kind of down on it for a while, but I've actually done a few lately, and I'm doing one now. And I guess I was down on it because I did it before the internet, and automating it on the internet seems kind of like cheating to me when I first heard it. And that was one of the few things I've been mistaken about. Another one was I said YouTube won't catch on and no one should use it, and you should host videos on your own site. Those are like right. The two mistakes I've made in my life, but I know when I'm wrong. I'm looking at Ted Leo. This is kind of a small world thing. Ted Leo is a preppy, but also a preppy like me. He went to Seton Hall. My school, Church Farm School, used to play them in sports games.
Okay.
But I don't know.
Yeah, my buddy's went to Seton Hall too.
I'm 6 years older than him.
Party there a little bit back in the day.
Yeah, I've wrestled people from Seton Hall.
There was a shooting on that campus one time.
Ugh.
And like, 05 or something. Yeah. And the reason that sticks out is my friends were going there at the time, and like they give you a free laptop when you go to Seton Hall. And then there was some controversy because they thought that the laptops were being used for like scams and like sex rings and crime rings and stuff like that. It was just New Jersey is a cluster it's because of it's actually the most densely populated state, I believe, in the country. So there's just so much crap taking place there. But so is that your only link to Ted Leo, or was there some other stuff?
Yeah. I mean, I remember his band Citizens Arrest, but I never played with him. Hey, let's save this and then come back and finish up.
Okay, sounds good.
Cool, man. Hi, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends Radio Show. The internet has lowered the cost barrier for a worldwide radio show to a price approaching zero. Yet there is one arena where you still need thousands of dollars to approach the audio quality of the corporate media. Doing a live spoken show with more than one host in different geographic locations. Our program, Fiend Phone, will solve that problem, and it will be given away free. Go to fiendphone.com to see what you can do to help. That's FEENPHONE.com. We're recording. Yeah, I want to promote my thing too. Sometimes I just get so into talking, I forget to pimp the thing that I'm supposed to pimp.
Right. Well, what is Fiend Phone, and how is it going to change everything for podcasters.
Okay, FiendPhone is something that I'm working on with Derek Slopey, who's the programmer who did Meowbit, which was the thing that we made for Namecoin for viewing .bit domains. And he is really visionary, and he's a good programmer. He's a good guy, and he does what he says he's going to do, which is very important. You know, I've talked to some other people who are like, yeah, I'd like to chip in on your project, but, you know, I've hired programmers before, and then they've, like, done a bunch of work but not finished, and I've owed them money. And I'm like, that's not my guy. That's not this guy, you know?
Right.
I like to do projects with people that I've done projects with before who've done well, you know? I kind of tend to work with the same people over and over and over, which is one reason I loved working with Nima, because he was always – he always did things perfectly and quickly and creatively. And it's kind of a drag that that he's not available anymore. But, you know, that's another thing, too. It's like, don't just diversify the projects you do for money and for fun, but also diversify the people. Open source the people. So you don't have – I don't like to have any single point of failure in anything I do, whether it's, you know, technology or people or projects or whatever. And you know, you were talking about the guy who is like resentful of like, oh, I don't want to talk about my band. It's like, I was in a band that, you know, did some things and was commercial, you know, commercially successful to an extent and made a living at it for a few years and toured America a bunch of times and toured the world and made great records and people dug it. There's two of those guys I will never speak to again. One of them is a sociopath. The other is such a statist that he just, like, every time he talks to me, he just basically says I should be institutionalized because I don't want to vote for Obama. So I don't talk to people like that. The other guy I talk to, you know, occasionally, we're still friends. But if you bring up that band, there's no way I'm going to say, dude, I don't want to talk about that. I'll talk about it till the cows come home because I'm proud of it. I'm pleased with it. The music was great. It nearly killed me. And two of the guys are, you know, I won't talk to, but I'm not going to be a puss about it and be like, oh, I can't talk about it, you know? And the reason is like, I would be willing to bet that guy bet his whole life on those three other guys and probably had financial arguments with him and whatever. And it's like, I don't like to get into situations where I feel like I'm in jail. And I have felt that way creatively with people that I've been working with before. And it's like, once you're into a project that's big and it has some funding and it's got some game and it's going somewhere and it feels worthwhile, which is why you did it in the first place, you know, people tend to stay in those bad marriages because they don't want to – those bad artistic marriages because they don't want to give up the project and start over again. But I've gotten to the point in my life over the last 10 years where I'm like, I will cut anybody out of my life permanently with one phone call and never speak to them again and just delete everything they send me rather than deal with crap like that, you know?
Yeah.
So I've found this great guy. He's a friend of mine. We hung out at Porkfest. We know each other. We've spent a million hours on the phone talking, Derek, and I've seen him work, and he's great. So I've been frustrated ever since I started podcasting that there wasn't a great way for two people in different locations to sound like they're in the same room. And eventually in the past couple of years, a few things have come out that can do that, but they're not open source. They're not free software. They're not free. They cost like $400 for two people up to like $3,500, depending on what you get, whether it's software, hardware. And I know this isn't rocket science. I know it can be done. I've talked with this programmer about it. It can be done. And we're raising money to basically pay him to do it. And maybe we might need to get one other programmer for a short section of it to work on the audio inputs to the codec we're using. You know, and we've actually talked to this guy who worked on the open source codec Opus that we're going to use. Like, he might be the guy we hire when we get to that point. So yeah, we're trying to raise $20,000. You know, we'll work on it if we don't make that much, but if we don't make that much, it's basically going to be, this guy's going to be working for free, and I don't want to ask him to work for free. And if he's being paid, he can work on it and hit it hard and do it proactively and regularly until it's done, rather than, oh, I can work a few hours a week here and there and, you know, it gets done in 2 years. I'd rather it get done quickly. We're going to give it away. basically the options people have for doing it now without paying money are, you know, Skype, Google Hangouts, Blink, TeamSpeak, you know, Mumble. There's a couple more. The thing is, those are not made for what we're doing. Those are made for usually for gamers, for like 10 or 20 gamers in a crew or a group, you know, team, whatever they call them, you know, those packs of gangers that roam the internet.
A clan.
Yeah, like 10 to 100 of those people all on cheap headsets, all yelling. And that has a lot different technological needs than two people with good microphones in a good room just talking to each other. The difference is all of those protocols and programs work through a central server, which adds latency. We're going to go peer-to-peer, point-to-point, P2P, which, you know, has some issues too. It has some security issues that we're going to have to overcome. It has some networking issues we're going to have to overcome. But it can be done. I've seen it done, but it's in proprietary software that costs a bunch of money. You know, I don't want we want to build it from the ground up. And those other programs are made for, you know, crappy mics. Basically, they're made to work with any mic. They're made to work okay, kind of so-so, with any mic in any environment. We're trying to make something specifically to sound great with a good mic in a good environment. That's the difference.
Yeah, and I was going to say, too, that I have a little background in software development. My father was a tester my whole life, software tester. So he worked on software projects my whole life, and I've worked with a couple startups so far in my career, helping them more so with marketing, but I've watched the software process go. And I've worked on one project specifically, Calling Vault, which you can go see at callingvault.com. It's like a Google Voice, but you pay for it, and you're not the product, you're the customer. But that cost $1 million to build. So if you can build a replacement for Skype that is suited for just podcasting and what we're doing, and it's only $20,000, you talk about maybe 1,000 people giving you $20 each.
Yeah.
Most expensive software would be at least $100 for a license or $200 for a license.
Yep.
You're getting something that's functional out of the box for a $20 donation, and there's got to be 1,000 podcasters out there that could use it, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, you deal with a lot of what the liberals call the free rider problem with something like that. But, you know, because there's a lot of people who are going to use it and will never give money or won't give any up front when we need it more than when it's done.
Right.
But – And people have asked me, like, you know, businessmen have asked me, like, well, why don't you raise $20,000 from investors, make this as a product and sell it cheaper than the other things for like $50? And I'm like,
right,
that makes sense as a business model, but it doesn't make sense as a I want to improve liberty, you know. And of course, this will be available to status also. But I don't really care about that. I care specifically, and I don't look at it as competition. I look at it as like, you know, other podcasters talking about how great the state is isn't the competition. The competition is Bill O'Reilly, Glenn Beck, and Barack Obama. You know, plus, because what's that?
I was gonna say once you get investors as well, you're gonna have, like, you know, board members and shareholders.
You're beholden.
And then, like,
you're beholden.
Skype or somebody comes in and wants to buy you out, and now you have to sell out, and defeats the whole purpose or something.
Yeah,
you know?
And they would. And we're putting this up open source, GNU licensed, so literally there's not a problem with somebody trying to buy it out because they could just take it, which I don't care because, you know, my primary goal is to improve the sound of Liberty Audio. I really think that we need to sound as good as Bill O'Reilly and Glenn Beck and Barack Obama do when they speak on the radio. And that's not happening yet because those people can buy 100 of the $3,500 boxes, no problem. You know, they don't even know what those boxes are. They just talk into a mic. But, you know, I want to improve. My primary thing is wanting to improve the quality of Liberty Audio, but my secondary thing is wanting to improve the audio of the world because I'm frustrated. You know, I would like to see this thing adapted for cell phones. I would like to see, a cell phone, modern cell phones, they're not even called cell phones, mobile phones, because they're technically not using cell infrastructure with the radio network anymore. They're phones. Mobile phones, you know, an iPhone, an Android phone, Windows phone. Those things still sound like crap when you make a phone call, but they can record stellar audio. I've had people actually record voiceover for me on an iPhone and send me the file, mm-hmm. and it sounds great. You know, if they're in a room that's not too echoey and they speak clearly and not with a lot of dynamics and speak about, you know, 6 to 8 inches away, it sounds great. So those phones have the capability of doing it. The network is the problem, and the networking is the problem, because most people don't clamor – like most people use those things for texting and sharing videos anyway. They don't even talk on them for the most part. But I guess this is something that I have taken up as a banner of improving audio, spoken audio in the world, as a thing that really irks me. And I don't believe – I don't understand why it doesn't irk more people. But it's the kind of thing – again, like I opened with this. I'll close with this saying that – most people can't specifically point out problem audio or say what's wrong with it, but all other things considered, they'll listen to the good audio longer and more often. And that's all I'm trying to do. And, you know, I've actually had people say, like, you're trying to raise 20 grand. What are you, greedy? And I'm like, you don't understand. Anybody who would say that doesn't understand the realities of software development. As you put it, like, you know, it's not uncommon for someone to spend $1 million making something like this. And we can get it done for 20 grand. So go to fiendphone.com and send us a dollar.
Send them like $20, actually.
There you go.
If you can, that'd be great. And Michael, thank you so much for being on my program. And it was a great honor for me to have you. And I think you definitely, you know, dropped a lot of wisdom on my audience. And I can't wait to get this out there for people to feast on. And thank you for the audio help too.
Yeah,
appreciate
man.
That.
It's been a great honor to be on. Thank you. Thank you all for right, your buddy. Service.
Thank you for yours.
Worms.
Talk to you later.
Yep.